We're doing in Yaakov. We're up to page Chaf Beis in the Talmud, which is Ches Amid Beis in the regular in Yaakov's. Amar Yehuda Amar Avasi Amar Rav. We have a quote in the name of Rav. Asul Artzot Mot Keneged Ner Chanukah. You're not allowed to check out your coins next to the candles of a menorah, of a Chanukah candles. Kamita Kamei De Shmuel. When I quoted this, Rav Yehuda says, when I quoted it in front of Shmuel, Rav Yehuda was one of the top disciples of Shmuel. When I quoted this in front of Shmuel, Amali, he replied, V'chiner kedusha yeshba. Wait a second, is a candle holy? Why can't you use the flame to check your coins? Now we're going to see that that's not accepted halachically. So let's first see who are the parties involved in this argument here. We have Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel were the contemporaries. They were both disciples of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. They both learned during the time. They were students, and Rav already started giving halachic ruling in the days of Rabbi. Rav got smicha from Rabbi. Shmuel was Rabbi's doctor. Shmuel was a doctor and a top astronomer. So Rav and Shmuel are contemporaries. They're the first generation of Amoraim. They're the first generations of rabbis of the Talmud. Ordinarily, we have a rule when Rav and Shmuel argue, halacha kerav beisure. Halacha is going to be with Rav with regards to anything that's of a prohibitive nature, halachos of what's permissible or prohibited, like here, the laws of Chanukah. And halacha kishmuel bemamonot. When it comes to monetary matters, so then Shmuel carries the greater halachic weight. Rav Yochanan seems to have a greater weight than both of them. He was also a contemporary of the time. So back to our Gemara. Rav says you cannot count your money next to the light of a Chanukiah, a Chanukah candles. And Shmuel says, is there holiness in the Chanukah candles? Matkif la Rav Yosef. So now Rav Yosef, who's a slightly later generation, Rav Yosef was chief rabbi. He was a contemporary of Rabba. He was the Rebbe and the one who actually adopted Abaye, his nephew. So Rav Yosef questions, V'chidam kedusha yeshba? Wait a second, we're talking about respecting mitzvos. It doesn't have to be holy in order to respect the mitzvah. Does blood have holiness? Titania, we have a brisa that says the following, V'shafach v'chisa. The Torah said, we read it a few weeks ago, if one is slaughtering a wild animal, a deer or a bird, so then he will shecht it, he will spill the blood, and then cover it. So the Braisa says, these two were written together. Why does it stress spilling the blood? Why does it stress that action? Obviously, we're talking about shechting an animal. We understand there's going to be blood. The Torah was teaching us, the same limb you use to spill the blood, use it to cover the blood. Remember, you're slaughtering an animal, there's blood on the ground, the simplest thing to do is kick some dirt over it. Came the Torah and said, no, don't cover it with your foot. The mitzvot should not be treated by him in a derogatory fashion so that he won't view them in a derogatory fashion. So Chazal gave us an indication from the verse, you're going to cover the blood, bend down, pick up some dirt and cover it respectfully. So the way we treat a mitzvah affects the way we view the mitzvah. Someone asked me this past Shabbos, if I don't feel holiness in a shul, what should I do? So I said to him, try doing what the halacha says. Allah says you come to shul before you walk in, you stand out the door. That's where Matovu begins. Vani berov chasdecha avo veitecha. It's with your great kindness that I could enter your house. Now walk in and bow towards Aron HaKodesh and say, Ishtachave elechal kodshecha b'yiratecha. I bow before your holy sanctuary with awe of you, Hashem. Before you walked into shul, start thinking about what you're doing. If we charge into shul 5 minutes late, throw on the talis, say the prayers we put on the tefillin, finish the prayers we take off the tefillin. We're barely woken up by the time we leave shul. Well, obviously, you're not going to feel anything. The Torah teaches us our attitude, the way we treat something, affects the way we ultimately view it. That's why it's so important how we call other people as well, the names we use for other people. By using a derogatory name, you end up feeling the person is a derogatory person. That's something in our own minds. It's one of the reasons I recommend people call their in-laws Abba and Ima. It's quoted in Halacha, it's quoted in the Jerusalem Talmud. But it also helps us give them the proper respect. If you call them mom and dad, so you'll ultimately treat them properly. Hachanami, so the Rav Yosef says, over here too, the idea of not counting money by the light of the menorah is shelo yiyu mitzvot b'zuyot alav, so that a person shouldn't have a derogatory feeling towards the mitzvos. If you're going to use the candles of the menorah for mundane things, so then you're ultimately going to feel like the candles of the menorah are mundane. So the halacha that Rav said, don't use that light as candlelight to count your money, that was for this purpose. Are you guys ready to go in depth? Are we focused enough or should we move on? You have call for more depth? Mm-hmm. Yes? Okay. So, earlier the Gemara had discussed that you're not allowed to use the light of the menorah. So then the question arises, if we discussed it earlier, why did the Gemara raise the issue again? And if the Gemara brought sources for it earlier, then what's the reasoning behind this discussion? So earlier the Gemara was discussing that when we light Hanukkah candles, we want our children and we want people outside to understand we're not lighting it for the purpose of light. We're lighting it to spread the appreciation of the great miracle that happened on Hanukkah. That's the purpose of lighting Hanukkah candles. If you're going to light Hanukkah candles and put them on your table, and everyone's going to see you eating by that, they'll think, oh, you guys are having a nice event, so you lit candles in honor of the event. No one's going to appreciate you lit them in honor of Hanukkah. So that's why our sages instituted, light them relatively low down, light them in a place where you have other lights, where you're not going to use the lights. Our Gemara is coming from a different angle. You have other lights, you've lit them in the proper place, and no one's going to think you lit this whole menorah in order to check your money. So in such an instance, along comes Rav and says, you still can't check your money by those lights. Because when you put your hand next to it and check, is this a half a shekel coin or a 5 shekel coin, you're degrading the candles. It's not an issue like the issue we discussed earlier, where people are going to think you lit these candles for light, and then no one's going to appreciate the pirsume nisa, the fact that we're trying to publicize the miracle. It's a different halacha that Rav is teaching us. Be careful not to degrade the candles. Don't do anything next to them, even if it won't take away from the publication of the publicizing of the miracle, something that's a derogatory usage of the Hanukkah candles. Now this halacha, in a minute, this halacha also has other applications, if you think about it. You're carrying your tefillin. Your tefillin are in your knapsack. So you could put your knapsack down, the tefillin are there, but you shouldn't put them down and put your feet on them, right? Mm. There's an idea of respect. You're carrying books in your knapsack. You shouldn't put your feet on those books. You want to pick up your feet, put them on a bench. We even say that food shouldn't be used in a derogatory way. You'll notice that when we throw at a chassan, when we throw at him candies, they're wrapped. We don't throw open food, which would get soiled. Let's say you have challah that's left over. So you want to clean up all the gravy on your plate. If you're going to eat that gravy, fine. So you could wipe it up with the challah and eat it, no problem. But if you're using the challah as a sponge, even though the challah isn't a mitzvah, but nonetheless the bread should also be treated with respect. You don't use it to wipe the floor or wipe up things that spilled. Yes, very often people will tell you, a great way to clean up an egg that cracked on the floor, take a slice of bread, it'll soak up all the egg, etc. That's not so respectful to the bread. We're not supposed to use bread for things that are disrespectful. So we began with a mitzvah, we went as far as even the bread that we eat, we're supposed to treat with a certain amount of respect. Yes?
Yeah, to bring about, back to the subject about the Chag Chanukah candles, don't use other stuff. I want to clear out, or maybe did the moves it or not. Last Chanukah, I had some problems with it.
I'm sorry, but that's not our subject. This is not a class on halacha. I know, but we can't go into that. That much we covered last semester.
Oh,
sorry.
Yeah, it was into the subject.
I hear. Today we can discuss it after class. Okay. Mativ Rav Sheshat. Rav Sheshat asked, the Torah says, Michutz leparoch ta'edut ya'aroch. When we light the candles in the temple or in the Mishkan, so the Torah says, light them outside the curtain, outside the paroches, and you light them in the evening. So it's late afternoon and you're lighting candles. What does it look like? God wants light in his temple. V'chilo ra'u tzarich. Does God really need our light? For 40 years, we were crossing the desert. God gave us a pillar of light. For 40 years, you had enough light for 2 million people. So if God has that kind of light that he gives us when we need it for 40 years, so why does he give us a mitzvah during those 40 years, every evening, light some candles for me? He doesn't need our light, right? Ela edutu leba'e olam. Rather, the lighting of the candles in the Mishkan and then later on in the temple was a testimonial to the world. Shashchina shora b'Yisrael, that we have God's presence in our midst. My edut, how so? The Gemara says, what's the testimonial? You light a few candles? Amarav zone ner maravi. Rav said, that's the western flame. Shenoten b'shemen kemidat chaverotea. It would receive as much oil as the other glasses. Umimena ya madlik, and it was the first to light. Uvahaya mesayim, and with that you would conclude. And what? The testimonial is that so long as we were up to par, we lived up to our responsibilities, that flame never went out at night. It would stay lit, and it would stay lit throughout the day too. Even though it had the same amount of oil as the other flames, God says that was a miracle, that was commonplace. They'd see it every day in the temple. So that's the testimonial. That's one of the ideas behind lighting the flame. It's an indication, so to speak, that God's flame is in our midst. That flame keeps running. We do ours and suddenly it runs far beyond the laws of nature. So here we see an interesting idea. That the Hanukkah candles lighting in the temple for longer than expected really happened every night in the temple. We celebrate Hanukkah that for 8 days the oil burned. But technically this idea of Hanukkah that we just discussed was happening every night in the temple. But it was happening with one candle. And now it happened with all eight on Hanukkah. Every night they had this miracle that the oil would last a whole day, much longer than nature would have it. And then on Hanukkah they had it with all eight and they lasted for 8 days. Some food for thought. What's the message of Hanukkah? If we said the one candle lasting is an indicator that God's in our midst, right? That's the indication of the one flame burning. So then eight flames burning is a larger indication that way. And that's what our sages say, that Purim and Hanukkah were two miracles that were there to indicate to us, the Jewish people, that God is still with us. We were headed for the long exile for thousands of years where the nations would say, you're no longer the chosen people. So God gave us two shining lights, two indicators, hey, I'm still with you. Purim and Hanukkah. Yes.
Yeah, wasn't there seven in the temple menorah?
You're right. There were seven in the temple menorah. I said eight, right? Thank you for the correction. You're right. Yes, in the temple menorah there were seven.
There was no shamash?
No. They brought in a flame from the altar, but they didn't have a shamash there. No. So thank you. Thank you. That was a mistake. Yeah. Okay. We got two more minutes. Amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. So the great Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi said the following. Kol hashmanim yafim lidyo. Any of you learning to be scribes? Okay, so when we make oil, so there are two interpretations as to what this Gemara is telling us. We'll see in a second. There were two stages to making oil. Okay, one was when you mix the ingredients. So at one point, when they mix the ingredients, they would stick in oil into the black dye that they used. Some of you end up in chutzlarts in far out places. So I'll skip the Gemara for 1 second. There's an important halachic ruling you should know. The dye that we use, we are generally going with the ruling of Maimonides. Meaning, Rashi and Tosfos on this sugya have discussions of the formula. How do you make dye to write a Sefer Torah, to write tefillin? Maimonides holds anything that produces black that's not made from defiled animals, right? Anything that produces black is okay. Now, we have a few more criteria as to what would be kosher dye, but in general, we go like the Rambam, that any kosher materials that will produce black dye will be kosher dye. Again, there are a few more details I'm skipping over. It has to be that in order to scratch it off, it leaves a mark. You can't just peel off the dye. There are a few more criteria, but in general, we're going with the Rambam. And that's important. What?
Are there some people lachmir on that? To go with, like, because obviously the Rambam's answer includes Rashi and Tosfos.
Right. So that gets complicated. If you're interested, so then further down in the Sugiyah, we'll see the complications between Rashi and Tosfos. There's a machlokes, what saraf means. Saraf is very often sap. So Rashi learns that saraf is something called guma, and Rabbeinu Tam argues. So there's a big discussion, what's saraf? And there's another discussion about copper vitriol. There are a few components of the dye which are really in discussion. There's an argument.
It's like Tefillah's dye, right?
Nope, it's very different. Very different. Yes.
Discussion that's going on, I mean.
Yeah.
Sorry, I didn't understand. Every animal is given black dye?
No. You the components that make the dye, you cannot use anything that came from a non-kosher animal. Ah. So you can't. Let's say you have dye that's made and they use the pigment from a pig,
okay.
Then it's not going to be kosher dye. Now, I'll tell you an important leniency. Today, when you go to the store, the hardware store, and you get a black magic marker, so the black magic markers are made out of synthetic materials. They don't use anything from an animal in black magic markers. So if you see on your tefillin that there's a place on your straps or the tefillin that needs painting black, you can go and spend a lot of money and buy a marker that they put a label on it that says kosher for tefillin. Or you can go to the hardware store or the stationery store and get a good black marker for a quarter of the price. And before you do it, you say, I'm doing this for the sake of the holiness of tefillin. Now, don't be a wise aleck and say, okay, I'll go over all my tefillin and everything, because it doesn't come out as nice as the original dye they put on it. So it's only to fill in little spots that are necessary. There are two issues. A, it doesn't last as long and doesn't look as nice. And B, it's liquid. You don't want it seeping into your tefillin. You don't want it seeping in and then destroying the parashios, right? So you don't want to take your shoe polish and go all over your tefillin. You know, you're going to destroy the inside of the tefillin. So I'm saying if there's a little spot that needs touching up, so you should just know that the black colors that are sold generically here in the United States and in Israel, I assume most of the world's the same thing nowadays, so those are all kosher to color the straps with, and if you need to, the bayit also.